Say something in Japanese.
Oh, man. I hate when people ask me this.
Okay. Say Nerdburger is the super awesome podcast.
Nerdburger ga saiko podcasto.
Psycho podcast? What was the word?
Welcome to Nerdburger, episode 35. I'm Mike.
And I'm Craig.
How you doing, Craig?
You're being a dick, so I'm not going to ask you anymore. That's how I'm doing.
Tell us how you really feel.
You're being a dick. No, I'm fine.
I tried interrupting you last week.
I've had a lazy weekend.
I wasn't fast enough. Yeah. It's fun to see if I could slip it in there.
Okay.
Oh.
Jeez.
You had to go there.
You're the... This is just terrible, terrible podcasting. So yeah, here we are. We've got two guests.
Two more.
Two via Skype. So Dave's here again.
Hey, Dave.
But with no Emily.
This is true.
And instead, with his, I guess, hetero life mate, Matt.
Hello.
Hello, Matt.
Hey, Matt.
This is Matt, not Matthew, our regular guest. Different person. But he's joining us for a very specific reason. We'll get to that eventually. So how are you guys doing? Hello?
Mm? How's it going, guys?
How are you guys?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you guys?
Good, good. Dave,
I'm a dick. Apparently.
I'm lazy. That's not really a change.
I can't hear guys over the theme. Oh, thank you.
Okay, it's done. We still have an issue. It's like with some people, yeah. The theme is fine, and
some people it's not.
Gets goofy.
Can you hear us now, Dave?
I can hear you. Okay. I heard mumbling during all that.
Ah.
Okay, well, you can just fill in what you think we said. And if you want to think we were like complimenting you on things, and then you can think that. That's fine.
All right, I'll go with that.
So, Dave, you're traveling. What are you traveling for? Anything fun?
My older brother got married yesterday.
Congratulations.
Third time's a charm. So that's always good.
Well, congratulations. I hope it all works better this time.
I think it honestly will.
Oh, okay, that's good.
Enough about that. I figured I'd take an opportunity to visit family as well. And, because I don't get up to Michigan terribly often. But it's a small town, so we have, within the past 4 or 5 years, they finally got high-speed internet, and it's good. So I'm dialing in through the cell phone, actually, so I apologize if I sound like a, kind of robot or distorted or anything. It's the best you get up here.
Well, your theme is
yeah,
Mr. Roboto.
It's true.
Which you couldn't hear.
He knows what the song sounds like.
Oh, that's all he could hear.
I gotcha. All right. Do we have little things we want to talk about? That sounds terrible. Sorry.
So, Matt, you mentioned that you actually listened to the last episode.
Yeah, I did.
So you know what canstruction is?
Oh, yes. That thing that's over in the Atlanta Commons or something. Like the airplane made out of cans.
Yes.
Yeah.
We won.
Oh, wow.
Very cool.
We won Best in Show and People's Choice.
Was it my vote that put you over the top?
Yes, yours and about 350 others.
put you over the top.
We won People's Choice handily, and from what we gather, the judges. They didn't say it was unanimous, but it sounded pretty much. They said it was the one that all the kids wanted to run towards.
And knock over.
And knock over and eat. Yeah, because of all the marshmallows. People had actually stolen bags of marshmallows off the corners. Like random people throughout the week that had walked by. There were a few missing here and there. Like it had eroded.
Well done, people. taking marshmallows away from charities.
That's
and
right.
People who are in need of marshmallows.
Because the food bank did tell us that, yes, we will accept the marshmallows. Marshmallows didn't count toward our can count because they want you to use cans.
Right.
But they would take them and give them to people because they said even people in need like to have cocoa.
Or s'mores.
Or s'mores. Or
Or just
sweet potato casserole.
Whatever other two or three things you can make with marshmallows. Other than just stuffing them down your throat and having a sugar high.
But yeah, it still just reeked of marshmallows. It was so awesome. And it's still there right now. If anyone's in Atlanta and wants to go.
Don't steal the marshmallows.
Get high. Just smell them. Don't take them. Well, it gets dismantled tomorrow.
Congratulations to you and the team.
Thank you.
So you can hang your head on that for a year. You don't have to really do anything significant for about a year.
At least.
I'm going to ride this for a decade. Remember back in 2013? Do you have news? I have news. I imagine some of you, if not all of you, have already heard about it, heard about this. It's all over the internet the last couple days. San Francisco and Batkid.
Oh, yeah.
You kind of groaned at that. Dave, Matt?
I thought it was cool.
Yeah.
I have no idea. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Okay, so we get to tell somebody about it. Out in San Francisco, there's a little kid. He's like 5 or 6 years old. He has, I believe, leukemia. And the Make-A-Wish Foundation found out, you know, that however they set the wishes up and everything. But one way or the other, the Make-A-Wish Foundation turned him into Bat Kid. Gave him a little Bat Kid costume, paired him up with a full-size, you know, 6-foot-tall Batman.
Oh, I've got a question for here. Uh-huh. Oh, Batman. Okay, I thought you were talking about the, like, Weekly World News Bat Boy founding cavern. Oh. Kind
of. With the same photo.
Like, this is great. Bat Boy actually is real, you know. But.
No, not Bat Boy from the Weekly World News. but no, then the kid went out and... he and Batman, I guess what they rescued a damsel in distress from the Riddler and rescued some mascot, some like sports team mascot from the Penguin. And like the whole town, the whole city of San Francisco got behind it. And like the police department was there and the FBI issued stuff. And, you know, Obama sent him a tweet and all this stuff, or a Vine, I think. And they made a whole big thing out of it. And I mean, there was like, you know, in whatever the square was called, some in one of the public places in San Francisco, there was like, 10,000 plus people who were out there to cheer him on, and they made a whole big thing out of it. It went viral and it went crazy.
So what you're saying is he won at childhood.
So he what?
He won at childhood.
Yes, he won at childhood. he nailed the single digits. It's about as good as, I don't know. Does it get much better than being the superhero for a day? I didn't have anything that exciting when I was a kid.
And neither do all the other kids with leukemia.
Whoa, gee.
Wow.
See the opening segment where I call you names. Okay, you know what?
It just seemed a little over the top to me, you know? And like, who gets to decide that this kid gets, you know, to take over San Francisco for the day and all these other kids get to just sit in the hospital?
Mike.
Huh?
Do you want to be Bat Kid?
No.
It sounds like you kind of do.
Not particularly a Batman fan.
Do you want to be Super Kid?
I do not want to be Batman.
Oh, jeez.
Well, and the thing you have to remember is it's just not the kid who benefits from this. This is a story that can make people feel good, you know, just in general. So you're taking what would normally be a sad story and turning it into a really positive one. So, you know, he is actually being a hero. You know, the other kids get to look up to him and say, hey, that's awesome. You know, and adults get to enjoy it. So, you know, he might not have powers, but it sounds like he did the job.
Well, there you go. Take that, Mike.
All I can imagine are the numbers of applications coming into the Make-A-Wish Foundation right now.
Turn my kid into
letters,
a superhero in this city.
Mm-hmm.
My kid is, you know, likes Hawkman or Ant-Man.
But nobody's asking to be Aquaman, right?
Well, maybe.
Aquaman sucks.
Speaking of Ant-Man, have you guys... I know, Mike, you're probably not, but are the other you two guys via Skype here, are you Ant-Man fans? Do you know Ant-Man? Do you know they're doing a movie?
Don't know much about him. I don't really know anything about him. I assume that he was bitten by an ant.
I'm not sure how he ended up being an Ant-Man. He's a superhero. They're going to do a movie next year. They released the first test footage of him doing something. And here's the thing. Ant-Man's powers... he can shrink down to the size of an ant, but retain his human strength. Okay, I know that sounds weird.
How accurate and is that to command, the actual strength of an ant, you know, versus its body size?
And he can command ants.
Okay.
Like he can call up legions of ants.
Like he has access to the hive mind.
Right.
Okay.
Now, the command ants thing, that's not in the test footage, and I don't have a link for it here. I can probably dig around and find it.
You wouldn't be able to play it anyway.
Well, we won't be able to play it here, but I got to dig it up and find it, because it just suddenly occurred to me. But they did a test footage of it, and it's basically he's down the end of this corridor, and there's like two guards at the end of the hall, and he comes out of an elevator and makes his way down the hall and fights these two guards. And, you know, the whole thing where you shrink down to the size of an ant and retain your strength and everything?
Mm-hmm.
Holy crap. It really looks cool.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I mean, because he effectively disappears.
I was going to say, so you wouldn't be able to see him.
He's kind of Nightcrawler. You would
just see these guards getting thrown against walls.
Exactly. So it's kind of Nightcrawler-y, okay. Like how he does in the second X-Men movie.
Who plays the Ant-Man?
I don't even know. I just saw the test footage. I'm not even up to speed. I think it's Edgar Wright, who is like part of the Shaun of the Dead guys, who's directing.
Okay.
But I'm not sure who plays. They may not even have somebody cast yet. I don't know. But the test footage was really cool. Check it out. It's like, wow, okay, I'm in for Ant-Man. That's kind of neat. He kicked ass.
I think Craig just stopped.
No, I just wanted to see if our guests were going to say anything.
You physically stopped moving, though. You weren't even blinking. You had the same expression on your face. It was like someone flipped the off switch.
Yeah.
Seriously, are you feeling her?
I'm fine.
I'm asking for real now. How are you?
I'm fine. I guess maybe I had a little flashback to watching French horror movies. Whoa.
French horror movies.
Yeah, I watched two French horror movies recently, and boy, oh boy.
Scary or bad?
Mess you up in the head.
Oh.
Yeah.
So what'd you watch?
I watched one called Irreversible and another one called Martyrs. And I know I've got Dave on the podcast, so I'm not going to tell you anything about either of them.
I appreciate that. And you know,
because Dave is a hard down anti spoilers guy.
You know, I don't even want to know the name of the title if I can help it. To be honest.
Well, you need the title to be able to find the movie.
Yeah, but the title alone will spoil something.
Oh, please. I guarantee you, okay, Irreversible, kind of. I guarantee you, Martyrs will not spoil a thing. You will never figure out what that movie is about based on the title alone, ever.
But now that you've said that, that will be in my mind, and I'll be thinking, okay, this title has nothing to do with it, and that will clue me in, and I'll just start working from that frame.
Okay, so it clues you into the infinity number of things minus one that is the word martyr. Right?
Dude, you're spoiling the movie, man.
Jeez.
Yeah, now we know that there's infinity things in the movie.
there's things and stuff, and there's scenes you can't unsee.
Yeah, there's no martyrs, you know. I know that much.
But I want to see a movie about martyrs. But yeah, that messed me up. There's some really messed up stuff in both of those movies. But it's horror movies, and the French do weird movies. In general, a lot of French movies, horror movies in general that I've seen, you know, from France are pretty crazy. I mean, American horror is blech compared to some of the other countries.
That's true too. You know, haunted French pancakes always giving me the crepes.
Oh. Oh. Well. I want to see the new version. They're doing a remake of Ghostbusters called Toastbusters.
Are they really?
There is no Danish, only gruel.
Oh.
Uh-huh. Want to play that game? All right. Step up, boy.
I'm out.
I win. Woo! Anything else there, Mikey? Anything? Anything? What are you pointing at?
The YouTube thing? Is that where are you carrying me up for that?
Yes.
Thank you.
We have to move plugs and holes.
I hope that does it. So you guys both like Japan?
Sure. Yeah. Well enough.
Are either of you in Japan right now?
No, nope. Not really.
Okay, even though somebody Skype says they are in Japan?
No. Does mine still say that?
Yes. Yes, it does.
Regardless, you're both up on the culture.
Yep.
You like going there.
Sure.
Apparently, you've both been there.
Yeah. I lived there for a while.
Lived there for a while. Very good.
Dave's jealous.
I am.
We know Dave likes Japan and Emily. And I mean, Dave likes Japan and he likes Emily, but also Dave and Emily both like Japan.
Oh, you're a wordsmith.
Which is like a wordsmith, but with words.
Yes.
No, I was watching some TV, and you know, the wife and I like to watch the food shows and travel shows and that kind of thing. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with Anthony Bourdain.
Mm-hmm.
And he had the show called No Reservations for 10 years or so on the Travel Channel. And he's just recently moved over to CNN and changed. It's the same show, but now it's called Parts Unknown. And he did a show in Tokyo a couple of weeks ago. Either of you see that?
No.
Good. It was he's been there before and done. I'm pretty sure he's done more than one No Reservation show in Japan before. But this one, he went to Tokyo and he only went out at night.
Ooh.
So it was
Tokyo by.
It was kind of the
moonlight.
Well, it was the seedier, odder, weirder side of Tokyo.
Oh, the weird side of the Japanese.
All the nightlife, yeah. So there was a lot of discussion about Japanese porn and.
Okay.
What kind of places are open at night?
Where's this going?
It's going to be a bit of a callback for you, Craig.
Okay.
He had a chance to discuss the manga phenomenon with one of the pioneering authors of manga, a man who invented tentacle porn.
Invented it.
The inventor of tentacle porn.
Okay.
Yes. So, and this is their conversation. Jeez. Feel free to break in. I will pause it for you, but it's pretty entertaining.
In America, where I come from, we are told at a certain age to put aside childish things, the action figures, dolls, and creatures of our imaginations, to arm ourselves for the brutal realities of the real world, real combat, real sex. In Japan, increasing numbers of people don't. They continue to live a life inside four walls, inside their mind, the life we call the computer geek, the nerd, as avatars. There's a name for it, a whole subculture of what's called otaku. Once a derisive term, now a proud identifier of the geek, one who has turned his back on the real world and finds satisfaction elsewhere. Manga or comic books hold a different place in the cultural landscape here and address different needs. There's yaoi, for example, otherwise known as boys love manga, extremely popular with teenage girls. Stories change, but the core themes are sexually ambiguous boys getting very friendly with each other.
Whoa!
What legions okay. of young girls and soccer moms find compelling in the thousands of these titles is something of a mystery to outsiders looking in. But there they are, whole sections of manga bookshops dedicated to basically One Direction-type boy band figures having sex with each other.
Is that true?
Oh, man. Where do I begin?
Oh, okay.
I'll let Matt run on this one.
Oh, man. Okay. So I guess I preface this with, I'm no Japanese sociologist, but... the whole characterization of all that is kind of problematic, because, like they make it out to they kind of make it out like anime and otaku and all this stuff is like this sprawling thing, like this disease that's kind of spreading and all that stuff. It's definitely a different culture than it is over here in America. Man, I don't want to attack this. This is just ridiculous.
I mean, so, it's not as pervasive as they're making it out.
Yeah, yeah. But not only that, but like he starts off by saying that in America, you know, men grow up to be men and don't bother with that anymore, which is patently false. You know, I mean,
yes, you know, I'm looking at Mike and myself and the two of you as examples.
Yeah, well, he's making gross generalizations because he's got, you know,
yeah, and that
3 minutes to talk and then the next commercial break. So.
Right, so gross generalization at the very beginning kind of signals to me that, okay, everything else that's coming up is going to be BS.
So they're exaggerating for effect and to be, mildly sensational to make an entertaining show.
On TV?
Yeah, yeah.
Really, on television.
Yeah, so, you know, just take everything you hear on here with a grain of salt. But, like, for example, Yowie is not nearly as pervasive as he makes it out to.
Oh, yeah, just rows upon rows of comics, yeah. Of books.
Yeah.
That's the boy love stuff?
Yeah, I mean, that exists, and it's popular within a certain segment of American geeks, too. But
it's not at every schoolgirl and housewife and female in Japan is reading it.
They're not flipping out over it.
Yeah. But it is a different culture over there. The way that otaku kind of operate is it is different than here. Over here, you know, we have functional people like us, you know, who are nerdy people. But, you know, we have jobs. We have full-time jobs.
Speak for yourself.
I'm with you.
Just kidding.
But you know, we're somewhat functional people. Over there in Japan,
I'll go with somewhat for me.
Yeah. Over there in Japan, it is different, and the sensationalized version of nerdiness that the guy is presenting is somewhat true. I know that a lot of people that I made friends with over there, you know, they still live with their parents. You know, they're like 30 something, and they don't really want to move out because, you know, they're just doing their thing, you know, their hobbies or whatever. And you know, there's a lot of people like that. They don't have to move out because, you know, they're living with their parents. They're just doing their hobbies, you know, they're reading their manga or whatever. And that is kind of a thing over there.
Now, do they quote unquote get away with living with their parents just because of the culture that the family unit is, you know, that's considered acceptable for you to be living with your parents for much of your life.
Yeah, yeah. You know, like for example, the older son of the family is expected to have, you know, his parents live with them for the rest of the life, you know.
Right, because in time, they'll have to take care of the elderly parents.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Help them.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, that's how Japanese culture just always has been. You know, and it's like that with a lot of other cultures, too. But yeah, so it's kind of true, but it's not nearly as pervasive as you know, everybody that reads anime is going to end up living with their parents forever and not ever get a job. No.
I think what he's doing here is he's kind of setting it up for the shock value of what he's about to start talking about.
Okay. Yeah. So what's he about to start talking about?
Well, here.
Yaoi isn't generally explicit, though it can be. Some of the most popular manga are, however, lurid, over-the-top, illustrated stories of incredible violence, rape, murder, and sexual fetishism. Toshio Maeda is a manga creator like few others, the father of what can only be described as tentacle porn.
No.
Okay.
His 1986 manga, Urotsuki Doji, was about half-human.
Wait, is that not true? Is he not the father of tentacle porn?
So actually, well, that's false. But the bit before that is completely true. That was just how Japanese manga is completely over the top and ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's awesome.
Well, there you go.
As for this guy being the father of tentacle porn, that is totally false. And you can go back to the prince, you know, the wooden block prince, the ukiyo-e. And there is a rather famous print that you can find pretty easily online of the Japanese woman with an octopus that's attached to a very sensitive area.
Yes. I have seen that.
Yeah.
In fact, when we mentioned tentacle porn and you linked to the internet, that is the page you linked
to. Okay.
And that's the picture that's there.
So what he's trying to say is that he's
the guy who popularized did the first comic book in manga? The
contemporary
culture.
I can get behind that.
Okay.
Half bestial space invaders in search of an evil supreme being. It contained unbelievably graphic, lurid, violent, and one would argue offensive images of sex acts involving not sexual organs, but other protuberances.
Oh, okay.
And they're showing highly censored images.
It has been imitated widely, both in other manga and in live-action films. A whole genre of lurid but extraordinarily well-drawn madness.
Now he's sitting down watching. This guy's showing him the actual large format artwork that he does in a restaurant.
At Mano Uni restaurant, Toshio tries to explain.
You know, this girl seems like a high school girl. So, basically, it's forbidden. It's our sense.
Notice, by the way, the distinguished owner and her complete lack of shock or offense at the graphic, frankly horrifying images of rape, violation, and murder spread casually across the table for all to see. Japanese manga, ones that everyone reads on the subway home even, well, they're different.
The big breakthrough was you couldn't draw penises, you couldn't draw specifically orifices, you couldn't actually show humans penetrating each other.
In Japan.
Right.
It was a big no-no at that time. So I invented tentacles to be evasive about the law.
Oh, so it was a big scam.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's a loophole.
Get her on the rule.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
It's an eight-legged loophole.
At the time, you absolutely changed the world of manga. You created an entire spectrum of pornography that didn't exist before. I mean, if you
not can, true.
If you and two segments now, on our podcasts.
There and tentacle and demon manga. Demon. There is a tentacle and demon anime. Mm-hmm. A lot. That looks good.
Okay, now they just start eating food.
Okay, I was going to say, how long is this thing?
But
so there you go, everybody.
Yeah, so the movie they're talking about that he made, I've not actually seen it myself, but I've seen things that deconstruct it from people that, you know, are a little more reliable than this CNN show you're talking about. And it has some interesting history behind it. It's been released, you know, over in the U.S., Canada, and the U.K., you know, several times under different names and cuts and edits and things like that. Mm-hmm. And it's had some interesting cultural impact. It's part of what gives people, you know, in the West, a negative perception in anime, because it was an early release. It actually had some theatrical release, and it caused, you know, censorship laws against anime in general in the UK for some time that were pretty strict. And from what I've heard, are still some of them are still kind of prevalent. I guess in Canada, there was a release where there was this older lady who was reviewing for a major newspaper over there, and she walked into it not realizing what it was. And so her article caused a big stink. And so it's kind of set us back in our acceptance and understanding of that culture in the U.S. quite a bit, just because it unfortunately was an early release, you know, compared to, you know, a lot more of the more normal stuff that you might have otherwise seen. So it was actually kind of unfortunate, my point.
Yeah.
Well, I would, you know, if you haven't seen the show, it's on, we'll link it. The entire show's on YouTube. I don't think it's an official copy. It's a low res, but it's watchable. So if you guys want to check it out, we'll put it on in the show notes.
Okay.
What I really dig about this is that it really puts into perspective some things that happen in this culture. Like they're talking about how the owner was just sitting there. It's like, oh yeah, there's tentacle porn on the table.
Mm-hmm. See, but that kind of bugs me because you don't know if she's just smiling and
politely,
not saying anything.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Because that's,
because
that's
as Dave
part.
Has said, the Japanese people are a very polite society.
Well, yeah. And actually they eat a little bit and then he starts talking again. And the guy he's having dinner with says, the whole reason why the manga gets so graphic is because Japanese people they're very polite to each other and they have to have some kind of an outlet for this stuff. And that's one of the outlets.
But Mike, you sent a while back, we mentioned Big Ass Fans, the company that makes Big Ass Fans. And you sent me a link to the YouTube clip that you are linked to. No, no. The link, if you are receiving information on via your email from Big Ass Fans and you decide to unsubscribe from that, they send you a thank you with a little link saying, you know, go take a look at this. And it's
it says, thank you for going quietly.
For going quietly.
This is what happens if you call our 800 number to unsubscribe. Right. And
and it's a video of like a dance tune with people's voices looped into it, where it's just people talking about how offended they are by the name Big Ass Fans. Okay. So little old lady in Des Moines, Iowa, who is offended by the name Big Ass Fans.
She was from South Carolina.
Whatever. Yeah.
Check out some tentacle porn.
Have something to really be upset about. So, Matt.
Yeah.
You've got a Kickstarter going.
I do, yes.
Why don't you tell us all about it?
All right. It is for a Japanese role-playing game called Ryutama, the natural fantasy role-playing game. It's a translation that I'm doing with my pal Andy Kitkowski. We put the Kickstarter up about 15 days ago now, and we're up to $54,000 on our backer thing.
Wow!
Out of your goal of
8,000.
Well,
sweet,
done.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm pretty excited. Yeah.
That's
how quick. How quickly did you hit the 8?
I think it was like 4 hours.
Oh wow!
Jeez, you got almost 7 times that.
Yeah,
that's excellent.
So tell us about the game.
It's called the Natural Fantasy RPG. It's you know, your typical low magic medieval sort of fantasy world, except that instead of being, you know, heroes where you're going to plunder and murder and pick up treasure and whatnot, you're sort of like. I guess you can say that you're sort of like the NPCs that the heroes would meet. You're like the farmers, you know, the crafters, the healers. You're pretty much just normal everyday people, and you are going on a journey because everyone in this world goes on a journey at least once in their life, and this is kind of the story of your journey. So the focus is less on combat and violence, and it's more on the exploration and like the journey itself, and the art really gives it like a really you know, like a low key, like a softer sort of feel to it. So a lot of people have called it the Hayao Miyazaki's Oregon Trail.
Oh, Oregon Trail!
Yeah,
I love that game.
Yeah, then you would probably love this game.
I played that on my Apple II when I was a little kid.
Did you get dysentery?
Oh, there we go.
I got everything.
I was waiting for the dysentery comment.
Yep, there it is.
So what kinds of things might a character encounter on their journey?
Well, that's a really good question, because actually the GM, you know, the game master, he gets his own character. It's the Ryujin, the dragon person, and depending on the dragon person, there's 4 different types. It's a green dragon, red dragon, black dragon, and blue dragon. And the difference is sort of the atmosphere that each of them bring. Like, for example, the green dragon, if that's the class of character that the GM is using, then that kind of signals to the players that this is going to be about the journey and exploration, and like the normal sort of game type where you know, you might travel to this town where there's a festival, and you know, you have fun at the festival, and then they tell you about this really cool waterfall, so you go to the waterfall, and then you might have an encounter with somebody there and whatnot. The red dragon person, that signifies to the players that you're going to have like a lot of combat. There's going to be a lot of fighting, so that session might be fighting with Neko goblins, which are like, you know, like cat people, or like cockroach people, cockroaches,
nice.
Yeah. Just lots of different monsters that are available to fight and turn into trophies or whatever. The blue one is all about drama. So if the GM is running a blue Ryujin, then you know that there's going to be a lot of drama, a lot of, you know, interpersonal relationship stuff that's going to be going on. So there probably won't be any combat at all.
All the actors at the table will be excited.
Exactly. Yeah.
They get to play their character and be dramatic and political intrigue type things, or just interpersonal kind of.
Both, yeah. It you know, totally supports both. And then the black dragon person. This is for really dark ones. This is when you know someone's going to die. It's going to be really sad, and yeah, there's going to be some tears if the GM plays it right.
In one of the games I played, the GM actually switched dragons during a session. So that mm-hmm. is something that can normally happen as well then, right?
Well, I was sort of taking liberties with the rules for dramatic effect. But yeah, you know, it's as in any role-playing game, the rules are there to facilitate the fun. And if you can bend the rules a little bit to make it even more fun, then more power to you.
And I'm, you know, that kind of a situation, as in any role playing game, it helps if the players trust the GM,
mm-hmm.
it won't be, you know, it might be a little odd. It's like, oh, he changed the dragon. Okay. All right. I'm on board. He knows where he's going with this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's just that level of trust and you take it that direction.
Exactly. Yeah.
So it sounds like there's, you know, the combat's combat, and I get the interpersonal, the dramatic, the actory thing, darker and everything. But like with the exploration with the green dragon, is this built around, like you said, going to a festival and then to a waterfall, and it's, you know, it's essentially just exploring this fantastic world. So it's painting a picture, really.
Yeah, it definitely.
I was going to say, it sounds like it's not that combat heavy.
Well, in that mode, right.
Yeah.
Correct.
But just overall, I mean, I guess you can do, if you do Red Dragon,
right,
then it's more combat, but you have more options.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah,
and it's a cue for the players.
Yeah, absolutely.
Does the game come replete with all sorts of information on this world that it's set in, or is it more in the hands of the GM to come up with the fantastic things that the people come across?
Well, when you first start the game, there's a big section on how to create the world, except that it's sort of it's the ideal way to do it is to share the world building with between the GM and the players. So that, you know, in your first session, you're going to sit down, you're going to fill out this worksheet. The world is in this shape, and these are the ruling kingdoms. So that, you know, you're sort of pinning down the really important things that are important not only to the GM but to the players too. So that the players have a lot of agency in creating the world that they want to play in. You don't have to do it with the players. You know, if the GM wants to create like a hex crawl sort of game, you know, like the West Marches sort of game, where, you know, he's sending the players out into the West to explore, the GM can do that if he wants to. But at the same time, it could be a really good way to bring the players into the game if they have something at stake. You know, like if they know that there's a kingdom that they want to eventually visit because it's being ruled by a prince, Necro Goblin or something. And for whatever reason, his character wants to go there or something. Then you know that's a really good tool too.
Cool.
Now, what if people aren't feeling very inventive? I never participated in a Ryutama world building thing. Is like other the standard Japanese random tables, or are some other options to help inspire people?
Not in the core book. In the supplements that we're putting it into the expanded version of the game. For the plus backers, we are including a lot of random tables. We're putting in a lot of ideas for fantastic cities, a lot of information that you can use for like a Necro Goblin culture. Some fantastic places for you to visit in case you don't have time to build up a scenario. If you don't have a lot of time, we're going to be putting in a lot of stuff that you can use.
And I suppose it's when it comes to this kind of thing, it's really just a question of player buy-in. Mm-hmm. You might have a group of people, and one person's like, "Well, that's just I'm not really interested. Just let me know when we're ready to start the campaign." And you could just sit down with the other players and build the world, and then they have their stake invested in it. And the other person comes in as kind of the person who's blind to the world and is just going to, you know, explore and create and discover all the things, because maybe that's what the player wants. Is they prefer to just start out like, "I grew up here and I don't know anything else."
Yeah, yeah,
and absolutely. I want to go out and discover all this other stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I've considered doing something like that for games that I've been running, to sit down and actually kind of develop the world with the players. Mm-hmm. And I think one of these times in the not too distant future, I'm going to do it, because there's a game out there called Microscope that's all about building a world.
Yeah, yeah. Me and Dave both know Microscope.
And I was considering the idea of doing that sometime when I play a D&D game, or you know, run a D&D or run a something in Savage Worlds or whatever, and have the first session be a game of Microscope.
Yeah, it's a really good tool. Microscope is really cool for building a world.
So, back to Ryutama. Because I was sitting there at the beginning when you said it, because I wasn't sure how to pronounce it, and I was saying it in my head over and over.
I wrote it down with
phonetically.
Yeah,
well done. what other kind of fun stuff do you have in the additional backer rewards and things like that? Do you still have stretch goals to reach?
Yeah, yeah. We're not doing stretch goals as such, but we're doing something we're calling milestones. There's a lot of stuff that we want to get done, and we don't want to put like a price limit or anything on it, you know? So it just whenever we feel like there's been enough enthusiasm for us to, you know, really nail something down that we want to get done, then we'll bring it out. We've had three milestones so far. The first milestone, we showed that we are going to be doing ocean and wagon travel stuff, so that you can bring a wagon. There's going to be rules for wagons and carts and all that stuff.
Which and is a wagon cool. pulled by an ox, and that's when you die of dysentery. Because that was the graphic, right?
Yeah, yeah.
If I remember.
But in this world, like the beast of burden could be whatever shape you want. I think that Dave's character, he has a gecko that he's the giant gecko that he's using.
That could cool. I have the beast of burden that pulls my wagon look like Mike?
It'd be kind of twisted, but yeah, absolutely.
Hey, wagon ape, pull my wagon.
okay. And we're also putting in sea travel stuff, so your party can travel on a ship, and when you do that, you're obviously going to be needing a navigator. So that's a new class that we're including, is the navigator class. Let's see what else. We're putting in a lot of random tables for like NPCs that you're going to meet, so that you can just roll them up on the fly. We're putting in a new type of a new character race. You can play as the Koneko Goblins, which they're like the smaller, cuter cat people.
So the kitten people.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, yeah. They're the kitten people. Let's see what else. We're putting in random events for the weather and topography.
Sorry, that's my kitten impression.
My personal favorite is the full color book. That really got me excited when you announced that.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. Oh, so this is no joke. Full color and everything.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot excellent. Of gorgeous art that's going to be put in this book. So we're really, really excited about it. So let's see. We're putting weather cards because the topography and weather has a humongous effect on when you travel. So we're putting cards that can be used by the GM, to facilitate that. The latest milestone that we hit, we haven't quite posted it yet, but we're going to be announcing air travel rules and the new pilot class.
All right. So yeah. this is medieval. So we're talking air travel. We're talking like medieval magical air gallons.
Yeah, sort of. Yeah.
Not jet fighters.
No, absolutely. No jet fighters, no steampunk. I wanted to make sure that none of that is in there because, it's all about nature, and no oil, no really gross, grimy stuff. So, instead, in this world, they have started mining a new type of rock that rises when it's heated, and we're calling it sunstone. Okay. So, they're taking these humongous boulders and, tying little gondolas to them. And
I was going to say, tying a boat to a rock and then the rock floats. Yeah. And
sounds pretty much like Minecraft.
Oh, I have floating. Really... But so that's going to be the air travel rules based on that sort of stuff. The new pilot class and lots of new monsters, lots of new encounters, lots of new opportunity.
Well, cool. Thank you for sharing all of that with us. I'm now going to have to look a little more closely at it. I glanced through it a little bit in preparation for this, but I figured we'd let you sell it
to the
listeners. So we will link listeners. We will link it on the website and you can go check it out. This is the kind of this Kickstarter is in that sweet spot where people that go to check it out right now, since they know you've already hit milestones. Mm-hmm. When they go and they put their money down for something, they know they're going to be getting a crap ton of stuff, because mm-hmm. When you're the early backer, you don't know are they going to get to the big stretch goals and milestones and extra rewards. But now is the time where you hook in the people that were kind of like, I don't know,
Yeah.
Now they say, I pitch in this much money and I'm going to get this huge stack of stuff.
Yes. Yeah. And we still have a lot more stuff that we want to do. Hopefully we can get a lot more people interested in it, get this game going. I know that the French edition that was kickstarted, was it earlier this year, I think, we're getting some stuff from them. They've been really great, and we're going to be doing the same in kind. They're going to be helping us out with some new character classes and stuff like that. There's still a lot more stuff that we want to do.
All right. Excellent.
Oh, and that's an importer exporter. We should ask him about that.
Do you work in latex and latex products?
Do you import and not export?
I do, actually, yes.
For Vandalay Industries? So what's Dave trying to say with you being an importer exporter?
I'm not really sure if there's anything dirty that he's trying to say.
Oh, okay. Well, tell the story anyway. We'll make it dirty.
Don't underestimate Craig here.
Thank you.
I'm a customs broker. That's about as dry as it gets. I don't know.
Wow. Okay.
I've known you for over. Oh, sorry. Go on, sir.
For the lay people, what does that mean? What is a customs broker?
A customs broker. I am sort of the middleman who helps people to mostly import goods from overseas. There's a lot of paperwork, a lot of regulations and laws and whatnot that needs to be followed. And the normal person probably doesn't know everything that needs to be done. So they hire somebody like me to classify their goods, fill out all the paperwork, send it into customs, handle any problems that might pop up, get in contact with customs when something goes awry. I work, the company I work with is also a freight forwarder. So we also schedule the pickups and make sure that pretty much we try to make the importing process as smooth as possible.
What kind of background do you have for that? Is it like a legal background?
No, not at all. I mostly got the job because I speak Japanese.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. But I spent about a year or two studying for the customs broker test, which is extremely difficult. So you don't need a law background. You just need to study a lot.
Okay. Quick sidetrack. Mm-hmm. Say something in Japanese.
Oh, man. I hate when people ask me this.
Okay. Say Nerdburger is the super awesome podcast.
Nadbaga ga Psycho Podcasto.
Psycho Podcast? What was the word?
Psycho is like the best.
Okay. That's like, it sounded like psycho, but all right. It's a little more nuanced to it. It was like, how was that again?
Psycho.
Okay. Man, I'm just not at an age where I can try to learn a new language, especially not Japanese, which is from what I understand, a complex language.
Yeah, I suppose. It's not nearly as complex as English.
Right. Because English doesn't have a single rule that doesn't have an exception to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
What are the things that people would get hung up on if they didn't have you? Is there wacky regulations and things that people know about? Because Mike and I, as architects, we know that there's all sorts of code stuff that you're like, really? You got to tell us to do that? Or what does that, you know, what purpose does that serve?
Like, for example, you need to classify your goods. So if you are importing, bicycle parts, let's say that you have wheels and gears and all that stuff. If you're importing them all at the same time, and like, let's say that you have a bike that is disassembled, you can import it all as a bike, as a bicycle. And there is a certain, a 10-digit number that specifically applies to bicycles, and probably it's split up between, you know, like mountain bikes and you know, kid bikes and all that stuff. I don't know what the exact number is, but it's in there somewhere, and you need to write that number down on the paperwork. But for example, let's say that you're importing the wheels and the chain and everything separately, like in different shipments or whatever, you need to know the 10-digit number for each of those parts.
Jeez.
And there's seminars on how to do this. It's a big thing, but it's extremely important because every single part has a different tariff attached to it. Some items don't have any tariff at all. There's actually a really interesting episode of a podcast. I don't remember which one it is. There's a story about these import lawyers that were helping Marvel because Marvel was importing toys, and there's a separate classification for human toys, like dolls that are human in form. Okay. And there's a separate classification for monster toys, like boy toys. The monster toys have a higher tariff. So when Marvel was importing superhero things, they were trying to say, I think it's the opposite. It's the dolls are higher than the toys. So Marvel was trying to say that these mutants and everything were not humans, that these were monsters.
They're monsters.
Yeah.
So they're cheaper tariffs.
Exactly. Yeah. The court that's in charge of this stuff, they were trying to say, no, they look human. Therefore, they're dolls, so they had this tariff. And so the lawyers had to go to court and everything. And so they were arguing that because they're the mutants, you know, they have glowing eyes and this and that. So they're not actually humans, they're mutants. And so they go with the lower tariff.
They're monsters.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, did Magneto show up to say, hey?
Yeah, exactly. Which I thought
we are not monsters.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, on one hand, you know, the Marvel lawyers are saying one thing, and then the writers are saying the other thing. So I thought it was extremely interesting.
Jeez.
But, thank you, lobbyists and douchebag politicians, for having that rule. Now, I need to ask, are there any special rules for latex and latex products?
Oh, absolutely. There's. It depends on what chemicals are used in the latex. And I don't know the specifics because I haven't imported I have actually imported a lot of latex, but depending on the chemicals used, not those
gloves.
I have imported gloves, but and mostly machine parts. That's what I work with. Depending on the type of latex, there's going to be a different classification. And if the shipper is not being very cooperative, it could get really, really, I guess interesting is the word that I'll use for now, but yeah.
If so I can interrupt real quick, I want to know why Mike is so interested in the latex all of a sudden and importing vast quantities of it.
I was thinking the exact same thing myself, Dave.
No, it's just the Art Vandelay thing.
Uh-huh. Sure. Yeah. You can go ahead and.
So spin that
whatever way you want.
George pulled that out of his butt thinking, oh, this would be an easy thing to do. And
because nobody will ask any questions.
About right. But apparently there's all kinds of nuance, little things where that could totally trip him up if he ever actually tried.
Yeah. If they had written that episode with somebody like Matt ready to answer as a script consultant, they could have had, you know, George could have said, I'm in, you know, latex importing.
Yeah.
And somebody could have just, the person he was talking to could have known something about importing and tariffs and everything and started asking a bunch of questions that he couldn't answer.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That would have been much funnier than what they wrote. Wait, no, it would have been terrible. Because those guys are funny for a living and we had one funny story to tell about monster toys.
Yeah, exactly.
That's funny though, because Art Vandelay was also an architect.
Well, George always wanted to be an architect.
That's right. So we've got Art Vandelay in common.
Jeez.
If I can find that podcast real quick, to what was it called?
You can always just send us the link. Oh, we can put it on the website.
Yeah. Okay. I'll do that.
Yes. Please send us all of your links and we will put all of them on the website. I have your.
Oh, it was Radiolab. That's what it was.
It was what?
Radiolab.
Radiolab.
Yeah, Radiolab is a really great podcast that you should probably be listening to anyway.
I would do that if I did not produce my own podcast. I used to listen to podcasts before I started making my own. Now I don't listen to any.
Yeah, and Mike and I used to talk about fun stuff.
Yeah. No, stop. Save it for the podcast.
Oh, yeah. I guess I should mention I also have my own podcast.
Oh, hey. Here we go. Cross promo.
Super Excite Game, where we talk about Japanese role-playing games. And I also have a sub-podcast, I guess, where I talk about...
Subcast?
Yeah. It's called the JoJo Cast, and we talk about the manga JoJo's Bizarre Adventure.
Well, there you go. And we'll link to that as well. So send us the links.
Sure.
Well, I think we're getting to be about that time. Thank you, guys.
Hey, no problem. I'd like to promote my three podcasts. No, I don't have any podcasts.
But you have a blog.
There you go.
Yeah, I have a blog, newworldalchemy.com, and I'll send the link to that as well. I talk about games and my thoughts on things that people may or may not care about.
All right, we will get that all up there. Thank you guys for coming on the show. Yes, we appreciate you coordinating this kind of last minute. We got you guys arranged here just like a week and a half ago.
Yes, I apologize. My sister doesn't understand that plane tickets increase in price the closer you get to your intended travel date.
So his sister's not visiting today.
No, now she's coming in January.
Well done, Lori. We're pimping your episode right now. So where can they find us, Mike?
NerdBurgerShow.com, NerdBurgerShow on the Twitters, NerdBurgerShow on Facebook, and email us, NerdBurgerShow@gmail.com.
On the next episode of NerdBurger, Mike and Craig premiere their NerdBurger podcast Kickstarter.
Hey!
Mid-level backer rewards will include a chance for you to get kicked in the junk by Mike.
Sweet.
High-level backer rewards will include a chance for you to kick Mike in the junk.
Those are all taken.
There's going to be more of those than the mid-level ones.
They're all taken. Unavailable.
By me. Bye-bye.
Ow.
I did want to be that guy while you were recording, but it's pronounced manga. I don't know why they keep saying manga. So
yeah,
were they saying manga?
Yeah, they were.
Yeah, okay. They were saying manga.
All right. Well,
there's our title. It's manga, not manga. Which one written out looks the same?
Yeah. Ha, ha, ha. Tomato, tomato. Wah, wah. Yeah.